Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, November 29th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. Today's mini editorial is written by the Journal Editorial Board, and they write, "During the holiday season, remember you are not the only person a clerk has to deal with. Practice compassion and realize you too could be the subject of someone's frustration." And again, this was written by the Journal Editorial Board. We'll now move to an overview of the five-day forecast. Today is snowy with a possible 1 to 2 inches. It's going to be windy and colder with a high of 29 and a low of 12 tonight. Wednesday is going to be sunny, but it's also going to be cold with a high of 28 and a low of 9. Thursday will be sunny, breezy, and not quite as cold with a high of 40 and a low of 28. And then Friday is milder, windy in the afternoon, with a high of 48 and a low of 11. And Saturday will be colder, with plenty of sun, with a high of 30 and a low of 15. And a little more about what to expect from the weather today. The article headline is, "City of Sioux City Reminds Residents About Snow Removal Procedures Ahead of Tuesday's Weather." In preparation for winter weather, the City of Sioux City is directing residents to sioux.city.org/snow to find information about parking, snow removal, ticketing, and towing. The National Weather Service says snow and freezing drizzle is expected early Tuesday morning, before the precipitation becomes all snow after 9 a.m. New snow accumulation of around 2 inches is expected. Winds could gust up to 35 miles per hour. The city will notify residents via website, press releases to media outlets, e-notification, and social media platforms when a snow emergency is declared and again once it has ended. The snow emergency declaration prohibits parking or leaving a vehicle unattended on an emergency snow route street, noted by a blue and white sign with a snowflake. Vehicles may begin parking on emergency snow routes again when the snow windrow has been removed from the street and snow has been removed from the parking stalls or a snow emergency is called off, whichever is earlier. Additionally, citizens should park on the odd side of the street on odd days of the month after 7 a.m. until 7 a.m. the following day. Vehicles should be parked on even street numbered side of the street on even days of the month during the same time period. No parking is permitted on the side of the street where parking is prohibited. Residents are encouraged to remove vehicles from on-street parking where possible. Any vehicle found in violation of the snow emergency parking restrictions will be towed at the owner's expense. Questions regarding parking restrictions should be directed to the Sioux City Police Department Facebook page or siouxcitypolice.com. Greenwell George elected to Sioux City School Board leadership positions. Dan Greenwell was re-elected as president of the Sioux City School Board Monday, and longtime teacher Jan George was elected as vice president. Greenwell was elected president by a 6-1 vote, and George was elected vice president by a unanimous vote. George took over the post from Taylor Goodvin, who did not put his name into the running for the position. Greenwell, a business owner and a former executive at Terra Industries, was elected in 2019 and was successful in his bid for school board president last year, ousting Perla Alicorn Flory. In the roll call vote, Alicorn Flory was the lone vote against Greenwell's election. Greenwell said it was a privilege and a pleasure to serve as the president for the last year. He thanked the board for placing their trust in him again. In a letter to the board asking for support to be re-elected this year, Greenwell said the board president requires leadership skills, flexibility, nimbleness, and familiarity with good operational execution. During the past year, I have provided board leadership skills to improve staff morale, enhance our recruitment and retention capabilities, and help our district become a destination district again, he said in his letter. He listed various changes made by the board in his tenure, including wage increases, re-implementation of the middle school concept, creation of hiring stipends, district leadership changes, and more. I have provided recent significant positive improvements to the district and will continue to work with board members, the administration, and our citizens to better educate our children and prepare them for future opportunities, Greenwell said. George was elected in 2021. He taught at West High for 31 years before retiring. He also taught government, coached wrestling, and was a special education teacher for a time. George thanked the board for choosing him and said his goal is to continue moving the district in a positive direction. George said he brings a lifetime of serving and learning to the board. In his letter to the board, he also listed accomplishments made during his year on the board, including returning to a more traditional curriculum, retention and recruitment of teachers, and implementing tools and practices for teacher success. "I will always work to improve the learning and working environment of this district," George said in his letter. Sioux City Council greenlights a $104,000 grant for campground near Big Sioux River. The Sioux City Council, by voting in favor of its consent agenda Monday, approved a resolution to accept more than $104,000 in grant funding for the Big Sioux River Campground Development Project. The resolution authorizes the Parks and Recreation Department to accept a Resource Enhancement and Protection Fund grant in the amount of $104,998, which will support the purchase of 16.14 acres of land on the north side of the Sioux City River Museum, adjacent to the Big Sioux River. The RV campground will offer 79 motorhome and trailer campsites with the potential to serve between 316 and 474 campers. The campsite pads will accommodate motorhomes, toy haulers, teardrop campers, camper vans, fifth wheel trailers, and pop-up campers. The Sioux City Railroad Museum will provide overnight tent camping on a 5-acre green space lying between the river bend and the historical railroad zone. The city and the museum will enter into a development agreement. The council will be presented for consideration a capital improvement budget for fiscal year 2024 budget request in the amount of $320,000 to be allocated toward the remaining funding for the property acquisition. A 30-acre site nestled between the Lutz Hills and the Big Sioux River became home to the Sioux City Railroad Museum in 1995. Today, the museum features historic buildings and structures, as well as industrial archaeological sites, industrial heritage objects, and a rail yard. The city also partnered with the Railroad Museum on the Big Sioux Highway 12 Trail Project, a 1.19-mile trail running along the Iowa side of the Big Sioux River. The trail traverses around the outskirts of the museum's property and runs along Highway 12 to the intersection at Military Road. The trail's loop configuration has terminal points at the intersection of Military Road and River Drive and the intersection of Military Road and Highway 12. The campground will create a destination for visitors, instill community pride in residents, and expand and enhance recreational opportunities to serve residents and tourists, according to city documents. Festival of Trees announces Critics' Choice winners. The Festival of Trees committee has announced this year's winners of the Critics' Choice Awards. Bruce Miller of the Sioux City Journal and Tim Seaman of KCAU-TV were on hand on Sunday afternoon to select the winners. The categories varied based upon common themes and trends. The Sioux City Railroad Museum won in the Best Overall category for a tree featuring antique railroad engine ornaments and a battery-operated train. Several dozen trees and wreaths trimmed by businesses, nonprofits, schools, and individuals were entered into the fundraiser. The festival attracts hundreds of visitors annually. Country Crossroads Decorative Painters was honored for Best Wreath for a submission decorated with hand-painted spoons. Best Children's Theme went to Siouxland Autism Support Group for a Harry Potter-themed tree, while Siouxland Samplers Quilt Guild won Best Traditional Tree for a tree trimmed with handcrafted quilted ornaments. Sweetwater Cafe and Pony Express were awarded Best Non-Traditional Tree for a Nightmare Before Christmas-themed entry. Best Non-Traditional Item went to Jane O'Brien for a tree made from children's blocks. The trees will be on display until the event concludes with an live auction at 6:30 p.m. Thursday at the Ho-Chunk Center. Proceeds from this year's auction benefits the Siouxland Foster Closet, a nonprofit that offers free, new, and gently used clothing to children and teens in foster care and out-of-home placements. The Festival of Trees, now in its 29th year, has raised over $430,000 for local charities during the past 28 years. Sioux City teen pleads not guilty to murder charges. A Sioux City teenager suspected of fatally shooting his cousin and a friend pleaded not guilty Monday to two counts of second-degree murder. Public defender Jennifer Solberg filed the written plea in Woodbury County District Court on behalf of Joseph Cruz. His trial was scheduled for January 24th. Second-degree murder is a Class B felony that carries a 50-year prison sentence. Cruz, 19, remains in custody, held on a $300,000 bond. He is charged with the October 29th shooting deaths of Anthony Williams, 19, and Carlos Aguila, 21, inside a house at 1421 West 5th Street. Officers were called to the scene at 2:15 a.m. and found both men unresponsive and lying on the kitchen floor. Aguila, who had been shot at least twice, was pronounced dead at the scene. Williams was pronounced dead later at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center. Cruz arrived at Unity Point Health, St. Luke's at 2:42 a.m. with a gunshot wound to his leg. According to court documents, Williams and Cruz were cousins, and Aguero was described as a friend with whom Cruz recently began having issues over firearms. Prior to the shooting, Cruz wanted a gun Aguero possessed, and they began fighting over it. Court documents said Cruz eventually gained possession of the gun and fired several rounds, striking Aguero and Williams. In an interview with police, court documents said Cruz admitted to shooting him out of anger but denied shooting Williams, saying he would not shoot his own cousin. He said he didn't remember how Williams was shot. City of Sioux City warns about use of de-icers on new sidewalks and driveways. The City of Sioux City is warning residents about the use of de-icers on newly installed sidewalks or driveways. The city said in a statement that those who have installed sidewalks or driveways during the 2022 construction season should use plain sand as ice melt this winter. The guidance follows advice issued by the Iowa Concrete Paving Association, which says de-icer chemicals can have harmful effects on new concrete pavements. The ICPA advises using plain sand during the first winter after a new pavement has been installed to increase the life of a new sidewalk and/or driveway. This recommendation also applies to sidewalks and driveways that were installed with the city project. Additional information about the use of de-icers and the harm they can cause to new pavement can be found at concretestate.org/deicer-warning.html. North Sioux City Medical Marijuana Dispensary hosting open house. The first medical marijuana dispensary in North Sioux City is hosting an open house Tuesday. True North Dispensary, located at 1325 River Drive, will be open to the public from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Tuesday for a tour of the store and information about medical marijuana in South Dakota. There will be no marijuana products in the building during the open house, according to the press release. This is an opportunity for folks to come in and see what a medical marijuana dispensary looks like and to dispel any myths that people might have about this industry, said Ben Nesselhoff, a partner in the dispensary, in the release. True North is the first marijuana dispensary to open in North Sioux City. North Sioux City ordinance limits the number of medical marijuana establishments to 4 dispensaries, 2 growing, 2 processing, and 2 testing facilities. The South Dakota website, medcannabis.sd.gov, lists the 4 North Sioux City certified medical cannabis dispensaries as being Kind Care of South Dakota, Nirvana LLC, True Essence LLC, and True North Dispensary. It also lists cultivation winners True Essence LLC and Dakota Health and Wellness, and processing winners Zaza 605 and Twisted Greens. Those sites were chosen at a random drawing by the South Dakota Medical Cannabis Program. Local auctioneers honored at Kinect Stadium. Local auctioneers Randy Stabe of Hinton and Clint Voss of Lawton were honored at halftime of Friday's Iowa-Nebraska football game at Kinect Stadium for their charity work. The pair were designated as Iowa's 2022 Shields Heroes in the annual Heroes Game, which recognizes and celebrates local heroes representing both schools who inspire others and positively impact the community. The longtime Hawkeye fans have volunteered their auctioneer services to nearly 30 nonprofit organizations, raising millions of dollars for charity in more than 25 years. The Boys and Girls Club has benefited from their services for more than 40 years. In addition to donating their time, the two often donate or buy items at charity functions to further support the cause. It was evident through multiple entries received that Randy and Clint were affirmed by so many for their outstanding charitable work with countless organizations, clearly standing out as local heroes who made a tremendous impact in the community. We're proud to recognize Randy and Clint at a game day in Kinnick, Hawkeye fans and notable local heroes who align perfectly with our values, said Nathan Johnson, Communications and Sponsorship Manager for Shields, the title sponsor for the Heroes game. Siouxland man sought by Fugitive Task Force. The U.S. Marshals Service Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force is seeking the following person. Ricardo Ballesteros, 38. He is 5 feet 5 inches tall and weighs 215 pounds. Ballesteros is wanted by the U.S. Marshals Service for violating his federal probation. His original conviction was for the distribution of meth. Anyone with information can call 712-252-0211 or siouxlands.mostwanted@usdoj.gov. Iowa Teacher of the Year announced. The Iowa Teacher of the Year was announced Monday with some of the finalists from Siouxland. Crystal Colbert, a 16-year veteran teacher, was selected as the Iowa Department of Education's 2023 Teacher of the Year. She is a second grade teacher at Southeast Polk Community School District, according to an Iowa Department of Education release. I am proud of the amazing work Crystal Colbert is doing to make a difference in the lives of her students and the impact she is having on the education system in our state, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said. The finalists for the 2023 Iowa Teacher of the Year were Lori Brandt, a special education teacher in the Sioux Center Community School District, Levi Lecce, a high school mathematics teacher from the Sheldon Community School District, Amy Phillips, an elementary teacher in the Marshalltown Community School District, Corey Schalk, an elementary teacher in the Cedar Rapids Community School District, and Katie Weldon, a middle school mathematics teacher in the Norwalk Community School District. Now a story about the Merriam-Webster's Word of the Year. Gaslighting. Behavior that's mind-manipulating, grossly misleading, downright deceitful is Merriam-Webster's Word of the Year. Lookups for the word on Merriam-Webster.com increased 1,740% in 2022 over the year before. But something else happened. There wasn't a single event that drove significant spikes in curiosity, as it usually goes with the chosen word of the year. The gaslighting was pervasive. It's a word that has risen so quickly in the English language, and especially in the last 4 years, that it actually came as a surprise to me and to many of us, said Peter Sokolowski, Merriam-Webster's editor-at-large, in an exclusive interview with the Associated Press ahead of Monday's unveiling. It was a word looked up frequently every single day of the year, he said. There were deepfakes in the dark web, there were deep states and fake news, and there was a whole lot of trolling. Merriam-Webster's top definition for gaslighting is the psychological manipulation of a person, usually over an extended period of time, that causes the victim to question the validity of their own thoughts, perception of reality, or memories, and typically leads to confusion, loss of confidence and self-esteem, uncertainty for one's emotional or mental stability, and the dependency on the perpetrator. More broadly, the definition defines the word thusly. The act or practice of grossly misleading someone, especially for one's own advantage. Gaslighting is a heinous tool frequently used by abusers in relationships and by politicians and other newsmakers. It can happen between romantic partners, within a broader family unit, and among friends. It can be a corporate tactic or a way to mislead the public. There's also medical gaslighting, when a healthcare professional dismisses a patient's symptoms or illnesses as all in your head. Despite its relatively recent prominence, including Gaslighter, the Chicks' 2020 album featuring the rousingly angry titular single, the word was brought to life more than 80 years ago with Gaslight, a 1938 play by Patrick Hamilton. It birthed two film adaptations in the 1940s. One, George Cukor's Gaslight in 1944, starred Ingrid Bergman as Paula Alquist and Charles Boyer as Gregory Anton. The two marry after a whirlwind romance, and Gregory turns out to be a champion gaslighter. Among the Among other instances, he insists her complaints over the constant dimming of their London townhouse gaslights is a figment of her troubled mind. It wasn't. The death of Angela Lansbury in October drove some interest in lookups of the word. She played Nancy Oliver, a young maid hired by Gregory and told not to bother his high-strung wife. The term gaslighting was later used by mental health practitioners to clinically describe a form of prolonged coercive control in abusive relationships. There is this implication of an intentional deception, Sokolowski said. And once one is aware of that deception, it's not just a straightforward lie, as in, you know, I didn't eat the cookies in the cookie jar. It's something that has a little bit more devious quality to it, has possibly an idea of a strategy or a long-term plan. Merriam-Webster, which logs 100 million page views a month on its site, chooses its word of the year based solely on data. Sokolowski and his team weed out evergreen words most commonly looked up to gauge which word received a significant bump over the year before. They don't slice and dice why people look up words, which can be anything from quick spelling and definition checks to some sort of attempt at inspiration or motivation. Some of the droves who looked up gaslighting this year might have wanted to know simply if it's one or two words or whether it's hyphenated. Gaslighting, Sokolowski said, spent all of 2022 in the top 50 words looked up in Merriam-Webster.com to earn top dog word of the year status. Last year's pick was vaccine. Rounding out this year's top 10 are oligarch, driven by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Omicron, the persistent COVID-19 variant and the 15th letter of the Greek alphabet, codify, as in turning abortion rights into federal law, Queen Corset, consort, what King Charles' wife Camilla is newly known as, raid, as in the search for former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, sentinel, with lookups brought on by Google canning the engineer who claimed an unreleased AI system had become sentient. Cancel culture, enough said. LGBTQIA, for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or questioning, intersex, and asexual, aromantic, or agender. And LOMI, which many Wordle users tried back in August, though the right word that day was clown. We'll now move to the sports section. Our first story is from Morningside University. Morningside adds women's wrestling program. Morningside University on Monday announced the addition of women's wrestling to its list of sports. The first season of competition for the program is planned for the 2023-24 season. We are excited to add women's wrestling as the 13th women's sport to our athletic department, Athletic Director Jim Sykes said in a statement. Women's wrestling is one of the fastest growing sports in the region, and we are excited to give high school athletes an opportunity to compete at the next level. Morningside is the 6th Great Plains Athletic Conference school to offer women's wrestling, joining Dakota Wesleyan, Doan, Hastings, Jamestown, and Midland. 4 of the GPAC schools offering women's wrestling are affiliate members of the Kansas Collegiate Athletic Conference, with Dakota Wesleyan not competing in a conference. Morningside also announced Jordan Cliff had accepted the role as the first head coach for women's wrestling at the school. Cliff comes to Morningside from Roundup, Montana, where he started a wrestling program and taught at the school district. We want to welcome Jordan to our athletic department and to the Morningside family, Sykes said in a statement. Jordan's experience building up the Roundup High School wrestling program was something we valued, and we cannot wait to see what he builds here. I would like to thank President Albert Mosley, Athletic Director Jim Sykes, and the hiring committee for the opportunity to become the first head women's wrestling coach at Morningside University. I feel blessed to be called by Morningside University to establish and lead the women's wrestling program. It is an exciting time to be a Mustang, Cliff said in a statement. At the first women's wrestling coach at Morningside, I am driven to build a program that will be competitive on the regional and national level, but more importantly, I am thrilled to introduce prospective student athletes to the close-knit academic and athletic community that Morningside offers. With the addition of women's wrestling, Morningside now offers 29 total athletic programs, with 13 men's, 13 women's, and 3 co-ed sports. Now to Nebraska football. Huskers pay premium for rule to bring back program's glory. Matt Rhule said he had plenty of options after he got fired by the Carolina Panthers. He could have taken a year off from football or worked in television, or he could jump back into college coaching. A number of schools reached out to him, he said, but only one appealed to him and his family. Nebraska introduced Rhule as its coach on Monday, exactly 7 weeks after the Panthers fired him from five games into his third season. Awaiting him is the daunting task of taking over a team coming off a sixth straight losing season and a program that's a shell of what it once was, one of the biggest brands in the college game. I am here because this is the right fit. It's the right time, Rhule said. And if I have one message for you, we can absolutely do it. We can absolutely get University of Nebraska football exactly where it's supposed to be. It will be hard. It may take time, but it will be done. Rhule signed an 8-year, $74 million contract that makes him the third highest paid coach in the Big Ten, behind Ohio State's Ryan Day and Michigan State's Mel Tucker, and among the top 10 nationally. Athletic Director Trev Albert said the contract is 90% guaranteed and that some of the compensation is deferred. Rhule will have a pool of $7 million to spend on assistant coaches. When the Panthers fired Rhule, he was still owed $34 million on his 7-year contract. Albert said the Panthers were involved in Rhule's negotiations with Nebraska. Structuring a business arrangement that everybody is willing to sign off on was a bit of a challenge, Albert said, and there were some fits and starts to it. Albert said there was a period when it looked like the deal would fall through, but the sides reached an agreement on Thanksgiving morning. Rhule's starting salary is $5.5 million and rises by at least $1 million each year, topping out at $12.5 million if he still coached in 2030. Asked if he thought he would need to spend an average of $9 million per year on a football coach, Albert said the salary scale is rising in the Big Ten and Southeastern Conference because of dramatically increasing revenues tied to record-setting television rights deals. Let's be honest, there's a power two now, Albert said. Certainly not to denigrate any of the other conferences, but that's kind of where we're heading. If we are going to be serious about having Nebraska football competing at the upper level of the Big Ten Conference, there's going to be resources needed to acquire that talent. Rhule, who was 11-27 in 2+ seasons with the Panthers, was hired because of the success he had in his two college head coaching jobs. He had Temple playing for and winning the American Athletic Conference Championship in his third and fourth seasons in 2015 and 16. He had Baylor playing for the Big 12 Championship in his third season, 2019, after taking over a Bears program emerging from the sexual assault scandal under Art Briles. Rhule emphasized toughness in practices and games and said the only way to win games is to win the line of scrimmage. The Huskers have notably suffered on the offensive and defensive lines. Rhule, who grew up in New York City as a Penn State fan, was a walk-on linebacker for the Nittany Lions. He said he attended the Huskers' 44-6 kickoff classic win over Penn State in 1983 and was heartbroken when Nebraska beat out the unbeaten Nittany Lions for the 1994 Nebraska national title. Rhule said he respected the physical brand of the football the Huskers played back then and that he wants to bring it back. About 750 boosters and former players turned out at the Hawks Championship Center for a welcome event and news conference. Among them were Governor-elect Jim Pillen, a Republican who played defensive back for the Huskers in the 1970s, and the 1972 Heisman Trophy winner Johnny Rogers. The band played and fireworks went off next to the podium as Rhule and Alberts entered the building. Rhule, 47, is the sixth coach to lead the program since College Football Hall of Famer Tom Osborne won or shared three national championships in 4 years before retiring after the 1997 season. The Huskers' most recent conference championship came in 1999 under Osborne's successor, Frank Solek. Bill Callahan, Bo Pelini, and Mike Riley followed before the program bottomed out under Scott Frost, who was 16-31 in 4+ seasons and never finished higher than fifth in the Big Ten West. Rhule's arrival came 3 days after the Huskers closed a 4-8 season under Mickey Joseph, named interim coach after Frost's firing September 11th, and just a few months before the opening of Nebraska's $165 million football facility. There's not a game that I expect to ever walk into where we don't expect to win, Rhule said. It is not a burden, but a responsibility on me as the coach to know that there will be people from all across the state who take the money that they've made with their hands and work with and with their work and their daily toil, and they spend it to come watch our team play. You can't win every game every year, but you can certainly be a team that people are proud to watch. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, November 29th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. There are no obituaries in today's paper. And to continue with the football story, another article about the new Nebraska coach. The first 30 days, Matt Rhule's to-do list in the first month at Nebraska. Even in the offseason, there's no time for a college football coach to rest. And for Nebraska's new head football coach, Matt Rhule, there's no time for an adjustment period either. Nebraska's 2023 roster will be built in the next 30 to 45 days, and the clock has already started ticking. The college football transfer portal officially opens next Monday, setting off a period of widespread movement across the nation. As for high school prospects, December 21st's early signing day means commitments and decommitments will be rife in the coming weeks. So, as Rhule takes charge of the Nebraska football program, what's his first step to deal with this frenzied period? He said Monday, "The most important things to me right now are the current players. I need to sit down with them and talk to them. I need to talk to the players and I need to talk to the staff and the coaches. To me, it all comes down to fit. People have to want to be here and they have to want to be in the role they're in, and we all have to move forward." Rhule addressed Nebraska's current players on Monday morning and said he looks forward to having more one-on-one conversations in the coming days. In those conversations, Rhule said he'll share his vision for the program and tell players how he and his staff will operate. If his approach resonates with the player, then they'll move forward. But if it doesn't, Rhule said he would want them to go somewhere else where they could be happy. "We have to recruit people that want to be Nebraska men, who want to wear the N, and who want to pay the price for this team," Rhule said. But before Nebraska can fully embrace the recruiting trail or the transfer portal, it will need a staff. Conversations with positional coaches are crucial for high school prospects, and that's why Rhule will have to move quickly to put a staff in place. While no assistant coach hires have been announced publicly, sources indicate that Rhule has already locked down several of his former coaches. Marcus Satterfield, who previously worked as South Carolina's offensive coordinator, is likely to take on the same role at Nebraska. Meanwhile, three members of Rhule's Carolina Panthers staff, cornerback coach Evan Cooper, assistant defensive line coach Terrence Knighton, and assistant strength coach Corey Campbell, are also headed to Nebraska. "I don't need celebrity coaches who are going to see one school a day. I need coaches who are going to do it the old school way and go to 6, 7, 8, 9 schools a day," Rhule said. "We are going to have a hard-working staff. There's some guys I'd like to bring with me, but I want to be respectful of the staff and talk to them as well. But we need to be able to hit the ground running here soon." Rhule said he will sit down with Nebraska's assistants and discuss players who they've been recruiting along with those who are already committed to Nebraska. Rhule said the players in Nebraska's 2023 recruiting class shortly after taking over as head coach, and he's already extended multiple scholarship offers. Having been fired by the Panthers on October 10th, Rhule said he had a school reach out the very next day, and that allowed him to start working to identify collegiate prospects. In regards to his recruiting strategy, Rhule said that big, fast players are the build he usually prioritizes, even if those players require plenty of development. For all of his success in recruiting players to both Temple and Baylor, the college football landscape has changed since Rhule left it. While Rhule said the nation's best programs rely on the transfer portal less and less as their recruiting improves, it'll be part of Nebraska's off-season strategy. "We will leave no stone unturned to find good players. They come in all shapes and sizes," Rhule said. "We're going to be really aggressive recruiting-wise, getting out there and trying to bolster the class and get as much talent here as we can. We have a lot to get done in a short amount of time." Rhule also said he will be recruiting from office starting Monday night and would like to hit the recruiting trail on Friday alongside his assistant coaches. "Indeed, there is a lot to do in a short amount of time. Conversations with current players, prospective recruits, potential assistant coaches, and transfer portal targets will take up much of Rhule's time in the coming weeks. But as much as the next 30 days will shape the fate of Nebraska's 2023 season, Rhule knows it's only a drop in the bucket as he tries to revitalize the Nebraska football program. This week's important, and I don't know if I'll sleep very much, but next week will be important and the week after, Rule said. Here's what I know. The future of Nebraska football is not hanging on one decision. It's hanging on the accumulation of great recruiting, great development, great coaching, and great teaching. We'll just try to make sure we do that and say, what's next, every day. And we also have a picture from the Tyson Events Center about the upcoming NAIA Volleyball National Championship that starts on Wednesday. Taylor University's outside hitter Orlando Faulkner goes up for a kill during a practice session Monday at the Tyson Events Center in Sioux City. Taylor, located in Upland, Indiana, opens its NAIA Volleyball National Championship run in pool play Thursday against Bethel. The annual championship tournament begins on Wednesday. Jill Miller brings Christmas show with holiday classics and a new song. Jill Miller's 16th Christmas concert for Sunrise Retirement Community promises to shine a bit brighter. That's because the Sioux City-based singer-songwriter will be premiering her new original song, Shine, at the 7 p.m. Friday show at the Orpheum Theater. Along with many holiday classics, I try to incorporate material that may be considered soon-to-be classics, Miller explained. I wrote Shine with my friends Jimmy Nichols and Robert White Johnson. I think people will really enjoy it. Accompanying Miller on a stage will be Nichols, a former music director for Faith Hill and Reba McEntire, as well as an all-star band from Nashville. Adding a bit of local flair, she will be joined by the Bishop Heelan Catholic School Choir. Students from Socorro's Performing Arts Studio are also slated to perform. As for Miller, she is simply catching up on the holiday spirit in a hurry. I've just come back from a wonderful trip to Israel, she said. I went there with members of my church. It was my first time, and I may be going back again in early 2023. The journey did put Miller in a bit of a time crunch when creating her Christmas concert. I don't mind it, she said. I look forward to the holiday show as much as the audience does. Indeed, the concert, a benefit for Sunrise Retirement Community, is near and dear to Miller's heart. The proceeds raised from Jill Miller's Shine will sustain Sunrise Charity Care Fund, which makes it possible for residents to stay even when they have depleted their resources. Currently, 35% of residents rely on charity care. To offset these costs, Sunrise hopes to raise $60,000 to go towards the Charity Care Fund. Since opening its doors in 1960, Sunrise has cared for more than 6,700 residents. Located on 33 acres at 5501 Gordon Drive, it is the largest community-based nonprofit senior care community in Siouxland. Sunrise has pioneered Alzheimer's care in the early 1990s and has two specialized memory care units designed and staffed to meet their unique needs. Miller said her dad was an early beneficiary of Sunrise memory care centers. I saw the quality of care my dad was given at Sunrise, she said. It was amazing. Now, Miller's mom is a resident at The Point at Sunrise, which provides independent living for active seniors. Miller, who was always close to her family, who encouraged her artistic ambitions. I consider myself a writer as well as a performer. I started writing poetry in junior high school and began writing songs in high school. Miller said she gets a kick whenever another artist covers one of her songs. I love to see how they reinterpret my words while giving new life and meaning, she explained. It is probably the same for the composer from Miller's very own Christmas show. My concert will feature plenty of country songs, some original holiday originals, as well as Christmas music that everybody loves, she said. Miller is just happy to be able to perform again for a hometown crowd. I hear from so many people that their holidays would not be the same without one of my shows, she said. That always makes me feel so good. This year, we will make Christmas shine bright. And if you want to go, it's called Jill Miller Shine, a benefit concert for Sunrise Retirement Community, and it's this Friday at 7 p.m. at the Orpheum Theater at 528 Pierce Street. We'll stay with the entertainment story with the headline, Convenience Store District Manager Displays an Eye for Art of Persons Unknown. When Daisy Clement closes her eyes, she sees faces. They aren't the faces of family or friends or anyone she had ever met before. Instead, the people who populate her mind's eye are, as she puts it, Persons Unknown. Persons Unknown was the name of Clement's art show that opened at the Block Art Gallery, 1307 Pierce Street, in early November. This wasn't just the first art show Clement was involved with. Indeed, it was one of the few art shows a self-trained artist had ever seen. "My dad was an artist who never really thought of himself as one," the Sioux City-based Clement remembered. But I always knew what he was able to do without any art school whatsoever. "Like father, like daughter? Probably," she said. "I'm 40 now, and I got started drawing when I was about 10, so Dad really was an inspiration to me." However, Clement's initial choice did not involve paint, ink, or anything quite so permanent. "No, my first art pieces involved chalk," she explained, "usually black." Growing up in a poor, blended family on Sioux City's west side, chalk was the only art supply available to Clement. Encouraged by instructors at the Salvation Army Community Center as well as by school art teachers, she credited drawing as a personal therapy. "Things would get bad at home, and I'd go into my bedroom to sketch something in a notebook," Clement said. Leaving home at an early age, she had to put her art aside in order to support herself. Eventually, Clement became a manager of Casey's convenience store. Working her way up through the ranks, she became a district manager for the grocery chain. "What does a district manager do?" she said with a tired grin. "A little bit of everything. During COVID, I was working 60 hours a week." With the pandemic receding, Clement wanted to get back into art. All the hallmarks of her art remained much like they did in childhood. Using black chalk or black pencil, Clement was sketching an image she conjured up in her imagination. "Sometimes the art piece will take 30 minutes to complete. It usually takes less time." "I'm fast," Clement said. "As soon as I think of something, I need to draw it." Indeed, most of Persons Unknown consists of faces, some with exaggerated eyes to emphasize emotions. "Some people think my models are sad or mad," Clement said. "I just think they're expressive." According to some art show attendees, her work bears some similarities to the cubism favored by Pablo Picasso. While Clement likes Picasso, she considers her style to be extremely personal. It takes her back to a childhood where art became a form of therapy or a type of self-expression. "You know what? I've invited my art teacher from school to see my art show," Clement said, smiling. "She couldn't believe I had my own art show." Reflecting for a moment, she let out a chuckle. "Sometimes I can't believe I have my own art show," she said. Hanging reproductions of her art pieces on the wall on the block, Clement wants to be a role model for young people who are going through hard times. Who knows? They may see random faces when using their imaginations. And maybe such unknown persons will become like known. "It's taken me 30 years to have my art displayed in a gallery," Clement said. And another entertainment story? Here comes the Nelsons. Matthew Nelson reflects on being a third-generation teen idol and becoming a part-time Iowan. As the twin sons of rock legend Rick Nelson and the grandsons of TV's Ozzie and Harriet Nelson, you would think Matthew and Gunnar Nelson would be the ultimate Southern Californians who spend Christmas on the beach. Not according to Matthew Nelson, who said the brothers spent their childhood in ski country while growing up. Nowadays, they call Tennessee home. "Actually, I spend a lot of time in northeast Iowa because my wife grew up in a little town in Waukon. Whenever we're there, I'm a regular Casey's convenience store because they serve the best breakfast pizza in America." Well, that's a pretty strong recommendation coming from the third generation of the showbiz-minded Nelson family. Here's one more Hawkeye State-related you may not know. Harriet Nelson, who was born Peggy Lou Snyder, was born in Des Moines 113 years ago. "So this California boy does have a bit of Iowa in me," Matthew said with a sense of pride. Both Matthew and Gunnar Nelson will bring their Christmas with the Nelsons multimedia show to Hard Rock Hotel and Casino's Anthem at 8 p.m. December 3rd. The multimedia aspect occurs when the two brothers find themselves in a Christmas episode of Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, the long-running TV sitcom that starred their grandparents and turned their dad, as well as their Uncle David, into teen idols. "Audiences always thought of Ozzie as being the ultimate dad, but he was so much more than that," Matthew explained. "In reality, Ozzie was his show's producer and director in addition to writing many of the scripts. Since Ozzy began his career as a band leader in the swing era, he knew music. When rock and roll became popular, Ricky became one of the genre's biggest stars, Matthew said. He was as big as Elvis. With such hits as Hello Mary Lou and It's Late having their first airing on the Ozzy and Harriet show, the sitcom introduced music videos to TV a good 20 years before MTV hit the airwaves. Music must run deep in the family because Matthew and Gunnar achieved pop stardom as Nelson, which had number one song Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection in 1992. In fact, the brothers' new I.E. Nelson Family Christmas album was just released in early November. Every time Gunnar and I perform, we'll get fans of our grandparents, fans of our dads, as well as fans who grew up listening to our music, Matthew said. We are the third generation of the Nelson family in music, plus we have three generations of fans. So, will there be a fourth generation of Nelson entering the music world? Well, I do have a 7-year-old son who is also named Ozzy, Matthew said. He's already a pretty good drummer, so you never know. And if you want to go, it's a Nelson Family Christmas with Gunnar and Matthew Nelson. It's going to be December 3rd at 8 p.m. That's Saturday at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casinos Anthem at 111 3rd Street in Sioux City. Now I have some information about COVID tests. The government no longer offers free at-home tests, but you can find COVID testing on the cheap, either through insurance or Medicare. Health insurance or Medicare Part B plans cover as many as 8 over-the-counter COVID-19 tests each month. Your plan may have preferred outlets where you can get tests for free, but you can also get reimbursed up to $12 for each individual test. You can go to Medicare.gov for a list of participating pharmacies. Or from your doctor, Medicare covers you when you get a COVID-19 test from a lab, doctor, pharmacy, or a hospital. And then community testing sites. Certain health centers and pharmacies offer low or no-cost tests through the Department of Health and Human Services. You can visit hhs.gov to find a testing location near you. Now we'll move to Dear Abby. Dear Abby, I became engaged to a wonderful man 5 months ago. We have set a wedding date for next year. I'm ecstatic, thrilled to be planning such an important milestone in my life. I am the youngest of 5 girls. 4 of us are extremely close. 3 of my sisters have graciously offered to help with the wedding planning and preparation. I have included them in my bridal party. Matron of honor, 2 bridesmaids, 2 of my teenage nieces as junior bridesmaids. There's one big issue. My parents and 2 of my sisters insist that I include my oldest sister, Iris, in my bridal party, even though she has a mental illness, schizophrenia. She is medicated, but still speaks to her voices. I love her, but I don't find it appropriate to include her in my wedding. My matron of honor is supportive and agrees it would be unwise. However, my remaining family is guilt-tripping me because Iris missed out on 2 of my sister's weddings due to being in a psychiatric facility. She lives with my retired parents now and requires care and supervision. Am I wrong for not wanting to risk including her on my big day? Signed, Future Bride in Kentucky. And Abby responds, weddings are family events that can sometimes strain relationships. As with all conflict, communication and compromise are key. Discuss your concerns with your parents, sisters, and fiancé, and consider their opinions and advice. Get assurance of their help to ease your concerns and raise your comfort level. More importantly, respectfully discuss your feelings and concerns with Iris. Instead of being in the bridal party, she might be happy with a less prominent role while still being part of the celebration. You may not realize how hurt she would be if she's excluded from this family milestone. Thankfully, you are healthy and stepping into a bright future. It would be wonderful if Iris could share in this joyful occasion. However, include her only if your parents and siblings are willing to guarantee that should her presence become a distraction or disruptive, they will quietly and immediately remove her. Dear Abby, while having dinner with a group of friends, the subject came up about giving Christmas presents to grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and godchildren after a certain age. Some said they stopped giving at 18 years. Others said they stopped doing it when the recipients start their own families. A few of us still give to kids well into their 40s. Is there a certain age to stop, or is it up to the individual? Signed, Generous in Illinois. Abby responds, there is no one-size-fits-all answer to this question. It depends on the individual, how many relatives there are, and whether the gift-giving is creating a financial squeeze. And our next letter. Neither my wife nor I came from money, but thanks to a lot of hard work, good choices, and luck, our children will come into money. Both of our kids are grown, married to terrific partners, and on good career paths. My wife and I are in our late 60s and in good health, and we're thinking about giving them a full picture of the potential estate when we are all together at the holidays. Is there any reason not to do this? We trust both them and their spouses. If so, how much information should we give? Should we give them specific dollar amounts for each account? Provide all account numbers? Should we provide copies of our wills? I could also see updating the information every year just so they know where things stand. I don't see any reason to have any mystery. Plus, it would help in their own financial planning. What do you think? Signed, Doting Dad. And the response, you have asked my opinion, and my opinion is that you should keep your specific financial affairs private until you have the qualified counsel of your financial planner and choose an executor. I do think it's important for you to let your children know that you and your wife are doing well financially, that your wills are drawn up, and that they will inherit equally. I don't think it's necessary for them to see your wills. Again, in my opinion, you should consider ways to disperse some of your estate before you die, perhaps through purchasing or helping them to purchase homes, and establishing college funds for their children. If you do decide to disclose the particulars, do not share your bank and investment account numbers with them. Let your children and executor know where your documents are located and make sure they can contact your lawyer and investment advisor. Medical directives and power of attorney decisions are also important components of this discussion. And one more letter. As I drove around my area this election day, I had a few thoughts. How about if we took down every single sign and personal political flag, no matter the outcome of elections? If we all did not know how others voted, I think we'd all get along better, and we would not feel bad about people every time we saw the hat he or she wore, the flag hanging on their garage, or the huge sign on their truck. I used to be friendly to everyone I'd meet along a sidewalk or coming out of a store, and now I avoid those people who advertise views different than mine. Let's go back to only advertising our politics for a few weeks before each election. That is more than enough. Tired of knowing. And the response. If you believe that political divisiveness is ruining positive human interactions, then you should rethink your own behavior. You used to be friendly toward everyone, and now if you know or suspect they voted differently than you, you avoid them. I'm suggesting that you have your own part to play, we all do, in terms of maintaining the peaceful, pluralistic society citizens want to enjoy. Casting your vote, advocating for your favorite candidates or causes, and greeting others with an attitude of openness and curiosity are all ways you can stake your own claim. These behaviors are ultimately more powerful and long-lasting than a yard sign. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, November 29th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. What exactly is fossil water, and why have we consumed so much of it? No, it's not a new brand of bottled water imported from the days of dinosaurs. Fossil water came from melting ice sheets, ancient lake systems, and a generally wetter climate tens to hundreds of thousands of years ago. It percolated into porous rocks, which were then buried under deep layers of sediment, where it was sealed off from the surface, and there it stayed, until farmers discovered it. And in the second half of the 20th century, they started drilling wells into fossil aquifers and pumping like mad, turning sunny, dry places into acres and acres of green farmland. Crop supplies boomed. Food became cheaper and more plentiful, grown in formerly parched places like California and Kansas, and shipped around the world for people like you and me to eat, ingesting fossil water with it. The trouble is, fossil water is a finite resource, and new studies suggest that many fossil aquifers may become depleted this century, so that we won't be able to rely on them any longer. This could mean that the crops that depend on them could become less plentiful and more expensive again. All the while, population will likely increase, the climate will likely warm, our demand for water will continue to climb, which means we'll have to adapt to the lack of fossil water, just as we adapted to its discovery, this time with more efficient crops and farming methods and more efficient use. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.